Chapter 9. The Auditions. The exchange of the money was to take place outside Speranza and Sons at dawn, as though they were in a spy film. Signor Speranza and Smilso stood on their side of the street and waited. They could not see into the butcher's shop as the blinds were tightly shut. Signor Speranza crunched on a mouthful of indigestion tablets and fidgeted. After his first flash of triumph had faded, his conscience had caught up with him in the night and lodged itself in his stomach. Smilso, by contrast, was annoyingly effervescent in his ridiculous beret and a white T-shirt with the sleeves rolled up, and scribbling notes for his documentary project into a tiny spiral notepad. His obvious joy gave Signor Speranza's moral sense a fresh jolt. "Why do you like this film business so much, Smilso?" he asked, sounding more irritable than he intended. "What's wrong with vacuum cleaners?" Smilso looked up, his eyes bright. "Nothing is wrong with vacuum cleaners, boss. It's just I want to be somebody. I want to go somewhere." Signor Speranza opened his mouth to tell Smilso that he was an idiot, but he was halted by a sudden image he had of himself at around the same age, helping his cousin Paolo load his luggage onto the train. 2 weeks, he heard his younger self saying and laughing. 2 weeks and you'll be back. He had stood there on the platform and waved Paolo into the distance, waved until the train had travelled far enough away that his cousin decided he didn't need to wave back any more and ducked his head back inside the carriage. And even though Signor Speranza hadn't wanted to go, had never wanted to be anywhere but his own village and his own father's shop, he had felt the tiniest pang of regret. What would have happened if he had gone somewhere? Tried to be somebody, as Smilso said. He would never know. His chance for something else had passed. Across the street one of the blinds twitched, and Signor Speranza fancied he saw a sliver of Signor Maestro's swarthy face peeping out. Then the door opened, and two Maestro brothers emerged, bearing between them a bulky nylon pouch, which they marched across the street. When they came face to face with Signor Speranza and Smilso, they halted. "My father would like us to accompany you to the safe, signore," said the brother on the left. They all went inside then, and huddled over the safe as Signor Speranza counted out the bills, the breath of one of the butcher's offspring hot on his neck. When it was confirmed that all 68,000 euros were accounted for, he stowed the money in the safe, and everyone straightened up again. The mouth-breather shook his hand. "I'll see you tomorrow, signore, for the audition." "Ah, yes, Ernesto," said Signor Speranza weakly. "I'll see you then." The son shook his head. "He's Ernesto," he said, motioning to his brother. "I am Ivano. I am going to try out also." He flashed a sheepish grin. "Oh, good," choked Signor Speranza. He saw the brothers out of the shop, and when they had gone, he called to his assistant. "Smilso," he said, "we're going to need name tags." The first thing Signor Speranza did once the area was clear of Maestros was to stretch the phone cord into the back room and call the Water Commission office. He informed them that he had 68,000 euros waiting in his safe at this very minute with their name on it. "But I see here that your cost for repairs is 70,000 euros, signore," said the toneless clerk. "I am afraid that in cases such as yours, the commission can only accept payment in full." Signor Speranza was aghast. He did a quick calculation, tracing the numbers in the air. "But, signore," he cried, "we have over 97% of the money." The clerk was implacable. "Then please ring us back when you have the other 3%. Arrivederci, signori. Have a nice day." All regular shop business for the remainder of the day was laid aside in preparation for the auditions. Smilso had never attended an actual professional audition, but he had at least seen one on television, and at his direction they pushed Signor Speranza's desk, all of the vacuum cleaners and the revolving metal racks of vacuum bags against the walls, and in the middle of the room erected a card table and two folding chairs where Signor Speranza and Smilzo would sit with a pair of clipboards, two glasses, and a pitcher of water. A meter or two in front of the table, they rolled out an old square carpet sample to serve as a sort of stage for the auditionees. It was of vital importance that everything look authentic. A Signor Maestro had been spotted lurking in the vicinity of Speranza and Son's front window, and had even once been seen to place his cupped hands against the glass and peer inside. After things were set up, Signor Speranza was still antsy. "What will we have them do, Smilzo?" he asked, "when they come in here?" Smilzo was surprised. "Don't you have a script for them to read, boss? Didn't Dante Rinaldi send something?" Signor Speranza frowned. He wondered if Signor Maestro, having once ensured his son's rise to celebrity, might also expect him to come home with lines to practice. "What about your script, Smilzo?" he asked cautiously. "Don't you have something?" Smilzo's eyebrows shot up almost into his berry. "Yes, boss." The tip of his pointy pink nose was twitching like a rabbit's. "Do you need a script, boss? You can have any of them, anyone you want." Signor Speranza crossed his arms and his moustache rumpled. "What are they about?" Smilzo counted off on his fingers. "One is about an alien spaceship. It comes to Los Angeles and—" Signor Speranza put up his hand. "No. What else?" "A period drama, 18th century London." "No." Smilzo was on his feet now, making sweeping gestures with his arms. "Is Viking ship," he said, flinging one hand out to the right. "Is modern-day New York." He swung his other hand out to the left. "Is time travel." He clapped his hands together. "Is huge crossover hit." Signor Speranza rolled his eyes to the ceiling and had a brief conversation with Saints John Bosco and Veronica, who he had discovered in the compendium were the two long-suffering individuals doomed to an eternity of dealing with filmmakers. But Smilzo wasn't finished. "How about this one, boss?" He adopted a strange voice and hunched over, swaying back and forth, his hands held open on either side of his mouth. "In a world where crime has taken over, where you can trust no one, and especially not the police, there is one man who fights back. Meet Ratman." He dropped his hands and resumed his normal speaking voice. "He's kind of like Batman, boss, but he dresses like a mask rat." Signor Speranza threw his hands in the air. "Smilzo, these are all terrible." Smilzo's exuberant balloon popped. His lower lip quivered. "Boss?" "Aliens, Vikings, muskrats," Signor Speranza snorted, causing his moustache to blow outward like a thick black fan. "I want something simple. A love story. Something like that." Smilzo pressed his lips together, concentrating. "I can do a love story, boss. I have a couple of scenes." "Perfect. You can go to Beezy's and make copies." Signor Speranza glanced around the shop and popped another Malox. "What else do we need to do?" "We should probably record the auditions, boss," said Smilzo. "It's called a screen test. Did Dante send a camera or—" "Ah," said Signor Speranza, and he disappeared into the stockroom, emerging triumphant 20 minutes later, covered in dust and cobwebs, and bearing a 1984 Sony Betamax Betamovie BMC 220 autofocus camcorder and accompanying tripod. "We will have to put in a different tape," he said, blowing the dust out of his moustache. "This one is Gemma's christening, I think." Smilzo wrinkled his nose. "He's very old." Signor Speranza frowned. "Nothing wrong with old. Besides, it looks professional. Look at the tripod." They both stood back and looked at it. Smilzo shook his head. "I could shoot a higher quality video on my phone, boss." Signor Speranza pouted, his mouth drawing up and his eyebrows drawing down. He had about had it with this phone business. "Won't we be getting new equipment, though?" said Smilzo, his brow furrowed. "All that money from Signor Maestro—" Signor Speranza snapped out of his sulk in a second. "No, no," he said quickly. "That money is earmarked." "For what, boss?" Smilso was interested. "Costumes, make-ups, special effects." Signor Speranza felt a now familiar bubble of panic in his chest. "Cinema," he declared with a flourish. One could not simply order a cinema over the internet, could one? Neither could one expect a cinema to be promptly built. "Dante says we need a cinema for the premiere. So the money from Signor Maestro, we cannot touch it." Signor Speranza was quite pleased with his quick thinking, but he had not counted on his assistant's reaction. Smilzo was standing stock still. "A cinema, boss," he whispered. "Here, in Prometo." Signor Speranza's breath stopped in his chest. Something about Smilzo's awe-stricken tone reminded him suddenly of Carlotta and the first Christmas morning she had been old enough to understand Santa Claus. "He brought something for me, Nonno?" she had asked with that same echo of disbelief. "For me?" Remembering that moment, Signor Speranza shuffled his feet. "It's not a big deal, Smilzo," he muttered. But when he looked sidelong at his assistant, he was horrified to see that the young man was crying, large tears rolling silently down his thin cheeks and dripping off the end of his pointy nose. His skinny arms, sticking out of the armholes of his enormous white T-shirt, looked like scrawny chicken wings. Signor Speranza panicked and made what he hoped was a soothing noise. "I'm okay, boss," Smilso choked. He sniffed and mopped his face with his rolled sleeve. "I just didn't know we could have a cinema, that's all. I didn't know we were allowed." Signor Speranza looked down at the floor. For the second time that day, he thought of his cousin Paolo and the train station. "Don't you want to get out of here, Giovannino?" his cousin had said, standing there on the platform and staring into the distance. "Don't you want to get out of here before this place strangles you, too?" Signor Speranza reached out to Smilzo and patted him awkwardly on the shoulder. "Of course we can have a cinema, Smilzo," he lied, his conscience burning a hole in his stomach. "Who is there to tell us that we can't?" Signor Speranza picked at his dinner. His early triumph in securing nearly all the money they needed for the pipes had fizzled after his conversation with Smilzo. He pushed his peas around on his plate. Who did he think he was, anyway, lying to everyone like this? Some kind of big shot who didn't have to follow the rules? Carlotta gave a happy shriek. Zio Franco was over for dinner again, and she was decorating his bald head with pieces of paper napkin. "I heard you're holding auditions tomorrow, Papa," said Gemma, "for this movie of yours." Signor Speranza looked up from his plate, surprised. His eyes met Betta's across the table. When was the last time their daughter had started a conversation? "Where did you hear about that?" he asked, a little dazed. Gemma waved her hand. "Around?" Signor Speranza and Betta exchanged glances again, Betta's eyes crinkling at the corners. What wonders had happened here? Gemma talking to someone outside this house, talking to someone who wasn't a world away in Rome. And she wasn't even finished yet. "I also heard there's going to be a cinema," she continued, loading her fork with salad. "I was surprised to hear that." Carlotta stopped sprinkling napkin bits onto Zio Franco's head. "Can I go to the cinema, Mamma, can I?" she asked. Gemma smiled. "Of course you can go, Cucuzza. I'll take you, okay?" Signor Speranza watched this conversation in disbelief, his head swiveling back and forth between his daughter and his granddaughter, a joyous ringing sound in his ears. What was happening here? "Well, you must be careful about getting excited," he said cautiously, looking across at Betta and thinking of Smilzo. "Anything can happen. Projects like this get cancelled all the time." Gemma shrugged. "Who cares? At least something is happening around here for a change. Don't you think, Papa?" By the following day, it was clear that word of the auditions had indeed spread like wildfire. Signor Speranza could not walk a step in town without people waving to him and calling out.
"I still don't understand, signore," said Don Rocco, frowning, as they stood on the step of Speranza and Sons. "Dante Rinaldi, a famous film star, wants to come to our village and make a film, but he wants you to raise the money. He wants you to pick the actors. It doesn't make any sense."
Signor Speranza avoided the priest's gaze. "Do you think it will rain today, Father?" he asked, shielding his eyes and peering up into the cloudless July sky. "I thought it was supposed to rain." Don Rocco ignored this query.
"And he has put you in charge, signore," he went on, his voice heavy with suspicion, "because you knew his father from the mines."
Signor Speranza's moustache twitched from side to side. Clearly he was in a tricky situation. On one side there was truth. There was truth, and there was also devastation. There was losing the village. There was losing Gemma and Carlotta. There was losing his father's shop. There was everyone he knew being chased out of their houses. On the other side, yes, there was a lie, but there was also hope. Was hope not as important as truth? He took a deep breath and met the priest's questioning stare.
"See, Father," he said, wide-eyed and innocent, "from the mines."
By 2:30 everything was ready, and Signor Speranza and Smilzo were sitting at the card table, facing the front door and the carpet sample, and waiting. Their dispute over the suitability of the Betamax beta movie had resulted in a compromise. They agreed to use the old camcorder and tripod for their imposing aesthetics, but they had taped Smilzo's phone over the lens cap. A crowd formed outside.
"Look at that, Smilzo," Signor Speranza marvelled.
There had not been a throng like that outside Speranza and Sons since April of 1957, when Luigi Speranza had received a shipment of Hoover Constellations, the most wondrous vacuum cleaner ever manufactured, whose canister did not have wheels, but instead relied on the power of its own exhaust to blast off the ground and float like a spaceship behind the operating technician.
"Maybe you should tell them to form a queue, Smilzo," Signor Speranza suggested, recalling what his father had said about the rush of people when he opened for business that long ago morning. "We do not want a stampede."
As Smilzo slipped out the front door, Gemma slipped in.
"Mamma made you artichokes, Papa," she said, placing a bowl covered by a steam-soaked tea towel on his desk. Usually she would have whisked away again before Signor Speranza could even look up, but today she boosted herself onto the edge of the desk the way she used to when she was little, and the way her daughter did now when she visited the shop. Signor Speranza, who had long mourned his daughter's resistance to chit-chat, found, now that she was here, and apparently not in any hurry to go, that he had no idea what to say. He looked around for inspiration.
"You ate already," he said finally.
But Gemma was gazing out of the window.
"You have a lot of people here," she mused,
and then she looked at him and flashed one of her rare wistful smiles.
"It's kind of cool, Papa."
Signor Speranza felt a painful tug in his heart. In a second he was back in those early days, right after Carlotta was born and the Ricci boy had left, when he and Betta had hovered and tiptoed outside Gemma's bedroom door, desperate for any sign that their only daughter wasn't broken forever. A smile like this, back then, would have sent their hopes soaring.
"Yes," he said thickly and cleared his throat. He looked out of the window also. "It's very cool."
Signora Barbaro and Signora Pedula, two widowed sisters aged 94 and 99, respectively, were the first in line.
"Mariana does not want a part," said Signora Barbaro. "She's too shy. She's only here to use the bathroom."
Signora Pedula, who had been in the shop perhaps 100 times, wandered into the stockroom and then the broom cupboard before arriving at the bathroom and closing the door behind her.
"There's no problem," said Signor Speranza. He handed one of Smilzo's photocopies across the card table. "Everyone will be reading from the same scene today, signora, even though this isn't the role you would be auditioning for.
Smilzo here will read the part of Vincenzo, and you'll read the lines for Antonia.
Signora Barbaro accepted the script, and then squinted at Signor Speranza.
I know you, she said, pointing at him. You were the foreman at the factory where my father worked, when I was a little girl.
She shook her finger.
It was not nice that you made him work on Christmas Eve.
Signor Speranza, who had certainly not even been born when Signora Barbaro's father had walked this earth, considered his options.
I'm very sorry about that, Signora, he said, bowing his head. I hope you can forgive me.
Signora Barbaro grunted and hobbled to the makeshift stage.
This is a love story,
she asked, peering at him over the script, and then she shook her finger again.
I want you to know, young man, that I am not taking off my clothes.
Signor Speranza's cheeks burned, and Smilzo started to snicker.
No, no, Signora, said Signor Speranza weakly. Everyone is keeping their clothes on, I promise you.
Signora Barbaro sniffed, picking her way slowly to the stage.
Vincenzo! She shouted at Smilzo, reading from the paper. I thought you would never ask me to dance.
It was fortunate that the audition was being recorded, because Signor Speranza missed the rest of it. He was distracted by a loud flush and Signora Pedula exiting the bathroom. Then, on finding herself face to face with a Dyson Ball multifloor, she promptly plugged it in and started vacuuming. Signora Barbaro looked up from her script and shouted over the din,
You want for me to kiss him now, Signora?
Antonella arrived for her audition in a skin-tight satin jumpsuit, a pair of gold hoop earrings embedded in her hair.
Is Dante here, Signore?
She asked, trying to peer around Signor Speranza into the back room. Signor Speranza coughed.
No, Signorina, Dante has asked us to begin without him.
Antonella frowned and put one hand on her hip.
Well, when is he coming, Signore? He is coming, right? Yes, boss, when?
Asked Smilzo, whose eyes kept sliding to Antonella in her jumpsuit. Signor Speranza waved his hand and poured a large glass of water from the pitcher.
Don't worry, he said, after a long drink. He'll be here. He told me to get the ball rolling.
Antonella sighed.
It took a long time to do my hair, Signore.
Signor Speranza nodded sympathetically.
Hair can be very difficult, Signorina.
Antonella and Smilzo took their places on the stage, Antonella studying the scene and whispering the lines to herself, and Smilzo staring at the carpet.
These two characters, Signore, said Antonella, they are the two leads, yes?
Yes, Signorina.
So the man will be Dante?
Yes. Antonella pulled her face.
It's just, Signore...
She looked at the ceiling and sighed.
I do not think I can perform the same with Smilzo as I can with Dante. They are worlds apart. It's not just in the face, either. Dante has an air of sophistication, of confidence, of charisma. You understand?
Signor Speranza shifted in his chair, his eyes flickering to his poor assistant, who looked very much as if he would like the floor to open and swallow him up.
You'll have to make do, Signorina. We have a lot of people to see. Antonella brightened. I know, Signore.
She rummaged in her purse and extracted a glossy magazine with Dante Rinaldi in a lime green tank top, smirking on the cover.
Maybe if Smilzo holds this up...
No, said Signor Speranza hurriedly.
That would not do at all.
Then a little desperate, he added,
You know... Our Smilzo is the one who wrote this scene. Oh, yes?
Antonella was surprised. She looked at Smilzo again, as if seeing him for the first time. Smilzo flashed Signor Speranza a grateful look.
It's just a little scene, he mumbled, his cheeks pink. It's no big deal.
Antonella frowned, peering at the paper again.
This character, she is called Antonia, she said. That sounds almost like Antonella.
Smilzo stiffened. And Vincenzo? She frowned again.
Isn't that your first name, Smilzo? I remember that from school.
Signor Speranza groaned and put his hand over his face. They began reading the scene, Smilzo standing on the far left of the carpet sample and Antonella on the right. As they read, Signor Speranza noticed that they drifted closer and closer to one another, seemingly unaware that they were doing it. He found himself getting sort of interested in what was going to happen when they reached the end of the scene, and Antonia kisses Vincenzo and folds him in a warm embrace. It appeared Smilzo was wondering the same thing, his cheeks flaming pinker and pinker with each turn of the page. But it was not to be. Just as they got to the end of the scene, just as they turned together to the final page, Antonella's phone emitted a sound like an air horn. She dropped the script on the floor and rummaged in her purse. When she looked at the incoming message, she gasped.
Dante Rinaldi's official fan site is releasing a new line of pillowcases with his face on them.
She turned her phone around so Signor Speranza and Smilzo could both see and sighed.
Isn't he beautiful?
It was nearing 5 o'clock by the time Ernesto Maestro and his band of brothers tromped in.
You will have to wait outside, signore, Signor Speranza said to Signor Maestro, poking his head out of the door. It's a professional audition. You understand?
Signor Maestro frowned and grumbled.
They will all get a part, Speranza? He asked hopefully.
Signor Speranza grimaced.
I don't know. Do you have 68,000 euros 15 times over?
Then, before Signor Maestro could work out what he had said, he whisked inside, whipping the door shut behind him. Signor Speranza and Smilzo gazed at the invading throng who were wandering about examining the vacuum cleaners.
We are surrounded, boss,
Smilzo whispered, shuddering.
What are we going to do with all of them?
Signor Speranza whispered back.
We could try the hokey-cokey, he said. Might be fun to have that on video.
Ernesto was to go first. No Ernesto, no 68,000 euros. Ivano herded the rest of the brothers together, and they were sitting on the floor awaiting their turns like cows in a pasture.
Just stand on the carpet sample,
Signor Speranza directed from his seat at the card table. Ernesto started for the sample, but then stopped and hesitated. He turned round and strode instead towards Signor Speranza, twisting his hands.
Signore, he said in a low and trembling tone, I want to be very clear about something. I have given this a lot of thought. I need you to know that I cannot accept a handout. Never mind my father's money. I have to earn whatever part I get.
Signor Speranza lifted his eyebrows.
Of course, Ernesto, he said. Your father mentioned that to me already, but don't worry. I am sure you will do very well.
Ernesto shook his head.
I will know, signore. I will know if you give me a part I do not deserve. I cannot accept that.
Signor Speranza nodded.
That is fair. Now, let us begin.
Ernesto advanced to the carpet sample. He took a deep breath and lifted the script. He raised his eyes to the camera, opened his mouth to speak, and ran out of the front door as if the devil was after him. Chapter 10. How to Run Like a Movie Star. The morning after the auditions, Signor Speranza was standing in the showroom of Speranza & Sons, winding a 7-meter length of replacement cording around his left forearm, when he saw, through the front window, a group of teenagers meander by. What was remarkable about this particular group of teenagers was that he was quite certain he had never seen them before. He gasped, dropped the cord, tripped, and then stumbled outside. Could this be it? Could this be the beginning of Prometo's own George Clooney-style miracle? Was the rumour of Dante Rinaldi's imminent arrival finally working its tank-top magic? For a few feverish seconds, he saw the village square teeming with tourists, the town coffers full, and Signor Maestro off his back forever. When he got outside, however, his view and his path were both blocked by Signor Maestro himself, who had somehow sneaked across the street on little cat feet, and was now standing in front of Speranza and Sons like an obelisk, his arms crossed over his gore-smeared apron.
"Speranza," he grunted. "What happened with Ernesto's audition? The boys will not tell me anything."
Signor Speranza cringed.
"I wonder, signore," he said delicately, "if you have not underestimated the talents of your son Ivano. His reading was..."
Signor Speranza struggled for a moment, recalling Ivano wading stolidly through his lines like a human metronome.
"Competent."
Signor Maestro shook his ponderous head.
"It's Ernesto, who is a star in the making. Did you ask him to sing? He has the voice of an angel."
Signor Speranza got a sudden electrifying image of Ernesto Maestro in white robes and a halo, and shuddered.
"Signore," he said.
Signor Maestro dug in, crossing his arms more tightly across his chest.
"When will the list be up?"
"Yes, signore." Don Rocco, who was apparently a shameless eavesdropper, crossed the street and joined them on the step.
"I'm sure everyone is very interested in the cast list. When can we expect to see it?"
Signor Speranza looked from one to the other of them, these dual harbingers of his physical and spiritual doom, and did the only thing he could do. He pulled an Ernesto.
"Rome was not built in a day, signore,"
he shouted and withdrew to the safety of his shop. Inside, Smilzo was sitting on yesterday's carpet sample and working on his script.
"Boss," he called, "what do you think if I have the hero rescue the girl from falling off the side of a cliff? He could be on a motorcycle or in a helicopter or something."
Signor Speranza's moustache bristled. His already frayed nerves jangled.
"Why can you not just write a regular movie?" he snapped. "With normal people doing normal things."
Smilzo shook his head.
"I have to have a set piece. This is Hollywood we are talking about."
Signor Speranza sighed and looked around the battered old interior of Speranza and Sons. At least Smilzo's imagination was intact.
"What is a set piece?" he said wearily.
Smilzo's face lit up.
"A set piece is the reason people go to see a movie, boss. Is Indiana Jones running away from a boulder? Is Tom Hanks dancing on a piano? Is the wow factor?"
Signor Speranza wrinkled his nose.
"And you don't think that for our movie we should go for fewer boulders and more dancing pianos?"
Smilzo pulled a face.
"I don't know, boss. I think we should go big."
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes and glanced out the window again, hoping to spot more herds of unknown teenagers. Then he did a double take, unless he was very much mistaken. Signor Maestro was standing at the window of the butcher's shop with a pair of binoculars trained squarely on Speranza and Sons. Signor Speranza yelped and joined Smilzo on the carpet sample. Bogus auditions weren't going to be enough to keep Signor Maestro at bay. He was going to have to string the charade out a little longer.
"Listen," he said, "we need to talk about the cast list. I think we should have Ernesto Maestro for the role of Giorgio."
Smilzo's mouth dropped open.
"Boss, what are you talking about? Giorgio is a big part, a lot of speaking lines. Ernesto did not even stay for the audition."
Signor Speranza held up his hand.
"An audition is not everything, Smilzo. It is not the only thing we have to consider."
His eyes drifted to the safe, and Smilzo understood.
"But, boss," he said, his forehead rumpling, "Ernesto will not take the part. You heard him yesterday. He said he will not accept a role if he does not think he deserves it. What are we going to do about that?"
Signor Speranza's head pounded.
"Right," he said, rubbing his temples. "You are right. We are going to have to think of something."
The next day was Sunday. It was nearly a week since Signor Speranza had started the rumour about Dante Rinaldi, and 51 days until the water was scheduled to be turned off. The safe at Speranza and Sons held 68,200 euros, 68,000 from Signor Maestro's Ernesto contingent and newly jeopardised contribution, and 200 from the Speranza's own meagre reserves, which left them 1,800 euros short. Signor Speranza awoke after a fitful night's sleep, with his chest heavy and numbers swirling in his head.
"What's that?"
he asked as he padded into the kitchen in his pyjamas. Gemma, who was already dressed and sitting at the table, looked at him over the top of an enormous wicker basket. "You're being wooed, Papa," she said, grinning. Signor Speranza frowned. "What are you talking about?" he said. He padded closer and examined the contents of the basket. There were two glass jars of pickled aubergine, a wreath of dried tomatoes, and five brown hen's eggs in an old shoebox nestled in shredded newspaper. "There's a card," said Gemma, and she read it aloud. "For Signor Speranza, we hope this basket finds you well as you work on casting the film. Warm regards the Trezza family." She looked up, eyes sparkling. "Wink, wink, right? They're trying to butter you up." Signor Speranza regarded his daughter in confusion. What was that supposed to mean? What was she doing, smiling at him like that? He looked again at the Trezza's basket with an uncomfortable feeling in his stomach. Was it possible he had taken this deception just a fraction too far? The front door opened and then banged shut, and Carlotta streaked in, followed by Betta.
"There is another one, Mama, from the Beezies!"
Carlotta crowed, brandishing a box of gold-wrapped Perugina chocolates.
"Can I have one now, please, please?"
Gemma shook her head. "Not until after church, cara mia." Signor Speranza looked at Betta and raised his eyebrows. Then he cleared his throat.
You are going to church with us?" he asked, trying to keep his voice light and casual.
Gemma opened one of the jars of aubergine and shrugged.
"If everyone is going to be falling all over you, I want to see it."
Signor Speranza glanced at the ceiling and had a brief word with God.
"I don't know what you are doing, Lord, but keep it up."
They walked to church together in the morning heat. Signor Speranza, Betta, Gemma, and Carlotta, with Carlotta running out ahead of them and then doubling back to check they were still coming. Three times along the way, Signor Speranza was stopped by some auditionee or auditionee's family member to have his hand shaken and his shoulder thumped, and on each of these occasions Gemma snorted with suppressed laughter. On their way into the church, Signor Speranza met Smilzo, and he hung back a moment as his family went ahead without him.
"I had an idea, boss, about the Ernesto situation," Smilzo whispered.
He was wearing his church clothes, which were a collared shirt and khaki pants, but he also had on the black felt beret, and Signor Speranza's eyes kept drifting up of their own accord to look at it.
"I am going to try to sit near him," Smilzo went on, "so I can see what he thinks, and I will tell you after Mass is over."
They separated to find their seats, Smilzo removing his hat as he pelted down the aisle in quest of the maestros, and Signor Speranza watching him go.
"Nino, over here!"
Betta called from the left bank of pews. Signor Speranza glanced around the congregation as he slid into his seat.
"It's more crowded than usual, no?" he said.
He ducked his head and pointed, trying to be discreet.
"Those people over there, have you ever seen them before? Who are they?"
Betta looked and shrugged, just as the organ struck up the processional hymn and everyone stood for Mass to begin. Signor Speranza sang along and went through the motions, but his thoughts wandered. He pondered this mysterious family at church. He recalled the teenagers he had glimpsed the day before outside his shop. He thought of Alberto, bouncing along in his Alfa Romeo down the streets of Oliveto, the cash flowing and the McDonald's cheeseburgers there for the taking. All of this gave him a warm, fizzy feeling of hope that continued through the first and second readings, the responsorial psalm, and the gospel, and only stopped when he sat down for the homily, and Don Rocco, standing at the lectern, adjusted his microphone and found his eyes in the crowd.
"I want to talk to you today, my brothers and sisters," the priest began, his gaze locked on Signor Speranza, "about how much the Lord hates lying."
It was the custom of the parishioners of Sant'Agata to gather on the church lawn for an hour of socializing following Sunday Mass. It was a custom in which, on this particular Sunday, Signor Speranza had no intention of partaking. If the pointed homily on the perils of deceit had not been enough to dissuade his attendants, the sight of Don Rocco during the recessional hymn, as he processed out of church, his step brisk and his robes flapping like an avenging angel, was certainly enough to convince Signor Speranza that it was in his best interests to get the hell out of there.
However, he had no sooner shouted to Betta that he would see her at home and fled out of a side door than he ran into Zio Franco, who, like Signor Maestro the day before, was doing his best impression of a stone monument.
"Giovannino," he said, blocking the way, "I need to talk to you."
Signor Speranza squirmed.
"What is it, Zio?"
he said, craning to see over his uncle's shoulder. There was Don Rocco, perhaps 5 meters away, by the front door, shaking everyone's hands as they came out of the church. Signor Speranza figured he had maybe 2 minutes before everyone would have exited, and Don Rocco would be at liberty to look around and find him.
"Can it wait?" he pleaded. "Can you tell me later?"
Zio Franco crossed his arms and scowled.
"I need to talk to you now."
Signor Speranza weighed up his options. He might not have time for a question, but he really didn't have time for a question and a tantrum. He sighed.
"All right, Zio, what is it?"
Zio Franco stuck out his jaw at a defiant angle.
"I want to go back to work," he said.
Signor Speranza spluttered. Back to work? 93 and 20 years retired. What was Zio thinking? He opened his mouth to say something to this effect, when he thought of Giuseppe Ragosta, Prometto's current stonemason. He was a nice man. Most of his jobs were out of town now, of course, since no one in Prometto had built anything new for ages and ages, but maybe he could find a little throwaway job to keep Zio busy, patching a foundation or spackling a wall, maybe. It wasn't exactly masonry in a pure sense, but there might still be a trowel involved somewhere. That should be enough to keep Zio occupied and tire him out.
"Let me see if I can talk to Signor Ragosta, and—"
"No," said Zio Franco, and he spat on the lawn. Signor Speranza frowned.
"Zio, I do not understand," he began.
Zio Franco jabbed his own chest.
"If I am going to work, then I am going to be the boss."
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes skyward. According to the compendium, it was St. Anthony of Padua's unenviable job to look after old people. He sent up a quick petition and took a deep breath. It didn't do to tangle with the elderly, he thought. They were just going to do what they wanted to do. A stubborn 93-year-old was just an ordinary stubborn person who had been practicing being stubborn for nearly 100 years. One had to pick one's battles, especially when, as Signor Speranza nervously observed, the line of people exiting the church had slowed to a trickle.
"All right, Zio," he said. "If that's what you want, then I'm happy." "Davvero?"
Zio Franco's face lit up with surprise, and he dropped his guarded stance.
"You agree, then? You agree that I can be the boss?"
Signor Speranza was startled.
"Of course. If that's what will make you happy, then that's what I want also."
Zio Franco threw his hands in the air.
"You are my favorite nephew, do you know that?"
he said joyfully and shook Signor Speranza's hand.
"Always my favorite, grazie."
He strode off then, and Signor Speranza was just reflecting that St. Anthony's response had been amazingly rapid, and perhaps even merited an asterisk and accompanying notation in the compendium for future reference, when Don Rocco was upon him.
"Signore," he said, "if I could just have a moment of your time to discuss today's homily—"
But he was interrupted by Smilzo hurtling into their midst, closely followed by Ernesto, Signor Maestro, and what appeared to be the entirety of St. Agata's congregation.
"Boss," said Smilzo, his pointy face glowing, "Ernesto says he would like to do it."
"Do what?"
Signor Speranza asked, inwardly rejoicing at this last-second reprieve and inching away from Don Rocco.
"Be a stunt double."
Ernesto nodded and beamed.
"But I would have to try out, signore," he said firmly. "I do not want any special treatment."
Signor Maestro appeared to be working something out in his head, his brow furrowed.
"But this is an important job," he asked. "I want my son to have an important job."
Smilzo nodded.
"Oh, yes, signore, very important."
Signor Speranza had by now edged his way around the circle of people so that he was as far away from Don Rocco as he could get without leaving altogether.
"This sounds like a great idea," he declared.
I will talk to Smilzo. We will arrange something. Maybe we can hold a tryout over the next couple of days, and then... How about now? Said Signor Maestro, drawing himself up to his full height and cracking his knuckles. What do you say, Speranza?
A murmur of approval for this suggestion went over the crowd. Signor Speranza bulked and scanned the surroundings, noting as he did the high prevalence of Maestro spawn.
Wonderful, he said, his stomach dropping several centimetres. How about now?
Signor Speranza made it very clear that if people wanted to stay and watch, they were going to have to sit in prescribed areas on either side of the church lawn. Only those auditioning or intimately involved in the film's production were to occupy the grassy area in the middle. By these means, he was able to hold Don Rocco at bay.
"I am allowed to be in the middle because I will obviously be getting a part," said Antonella, tossing her hair. "Isn't that right, Smilzo?"
she asked, looping her arm through his. Smilzo opened his mouth and then closed it again, which Antonella took to mean yes, and she smirked at her friends on the sidelines. Signor Speranza walked to the middle of the grass and addressed the crowd, which felt oddly surreal.
"Thank you all for coming," he shouted.
He scanned the faces of his family and friends as they began to quiet down. There were Gemma and Betta, with Carlotta, who was clapping her little hands. There were the Beezys, who ran the general store. There was Signora Catuzza, who had opened the cafe and was walking around with a tray held over her head, passing out drinks and snacks. There was Signora Zampronia, who had 7-year-old triplets and who would not stop vacuuming up their Lego pieces, no matter how many times he told her that she had to stop, though at least she brought her vacuum cleaner in to be fixed each time instead of throwing it out and buying a new one. As Signor Speranza perused these familiar faces, his throat constricted. He did not look at Don Rocco, but lifted his face ever so briefly to the sky.
"I know that I am lying, Lord," he thought,
his eyes stinging with tears.
"But I am doing it for them. You have to understand, I am doing it for these people here." "Boss?"
Smilzo was at his elbow now, his black felt beret freshly installed on top of his head.
"Do you want me to start now, boss?"
Signor Speranza looked at his assistant, and doing so steadied his nerves. He held his hands out.
"Everyone, here is Smilzo," he announced. "Smilzo, take it away."
20 people tried out, including the 15 Maestro brothers. The crowd clapped and cheered as Smilzo, who had somehow acquired a silver whistle on a string, led them in a kind of bizarre aerobics class. They jumped, ducked and rolled, karate-chopped and kicked invisible opponents. They crawled on the ground using only their elbows, commando style.
"Now," said Smilzo as his students stood, panting and grass-stained, "the real test."
"What is it going to be, Speranza?"
grunted Signor Maestro, who had refused to sit with the general populace and was pacing back and forth.
"What kind of test?"
Signor Speranza shrugged.
"I don't know. Smilzo is in charge."
"Is he, signore?"
piped up Antonella, who was sitting cross-legged on the grass, recording it all for the documentary.
"I didn't know that." She sounded impressed.
"Can anyone tell me?"
continued Smilzo, his hands clasped behind his back as he surveyed his students like a general inspecting the ranks.
"The most important skill a stunt man can possess."
A tentative hand went up.
"Experience with explosives."
Smilzo grinned indulgently.
"A good guess, but no." "Being able to jump from one building to another," called someone else.
Smilzo raised one finger.
"You are very close. The single most important skill that a stuntman can possess is the ability to run like Tom Cruise. Allow me to demonstrate."
Smilzo jogged back 20 paces and faced the wooded area at the back of the church lot. He adopted a starting stance, one knee popped and the other straight. Both elbows he bent at 90-degree angles, the fingers of each hand rigidly straight. The right hand was up near his face, the left down at his side. He took a deep breath, and his chest rose and fell. Then he was off. He sprinted, his knees pumping up and down like pistons, and his cocked arms cutting through the air like blades. Every 3 or 4 paces he turned his head to peer over one shoulder, as if he were being pursued.
He tagged a tree and stopped, and everyone cheered. Antonella stood up and jumped up and down.
"Smilso!" exclaimed Signor Speranza when his assistant jogged over for a drink of water. "I didn't know you could do that. It's very impressive."
Smilso beamed.
"I watch a lot of films, boss. I make it my job to study them."
Signor Speranza glanced dubiously at the mostly maestro group on the grass and whispered,
"You think you can teach any of those Cafone to do that? You think Ernesto can?"
Smilso shrugged. "Let's see." He lined them up like children in gym class with Ernesto at the front.
"You're going to take turns," Smilso told them. "When I blow this whistle, the first person in line will run all the way to that tree."
Smilso pointed to the chestnut tree he had tagged on his own run.
"Touch the tree, then turn round and come back."
"This is it, Speranza," muttered Signor Maestro, his beady eyes focused on his son.
"This is it," repeated Signor Speranza. "Come on, Ernesto," he thought,
wishing he had the compendium so that he could see if there was a patron saint of not messing up a sure thing. Smilso stopped in place, raising one arm. Then he lowered it with a flourish and blew a whistle blast.
Ernesto took off like a shot.
He tried pumping his knees up and down like pistons and made a valiant attempt at cutting his arms through the air like blades. Signor Maestro frowned.
"He is going off course every time he turns around," he said worriedly. "It looks as if he is weaving in and out."
Signor Speranza waved this aside.
"He's doing fine. Maybe he's pretending to dodge bullets."
The Maestro siblings were following their brother's every move. Smilso's organized line had given way to an excited knot.
"Go, Ernesto!"
one of them shouted. Then they all shouted it again, together. Ernesto looked back over his shoulder one last time, perhaps at hearing his name, and ran smack into the chestnut tree. He bounced off of it and lay prostrate in the grass. Everyone gasped. Signor Speranza turned to Signor Maestro and blinked.
"I think he did very well."
Chapter 11. Tree Stumps Have Feelings Too. Fate, chance, the hand of God. Signor Speranza believed in the last of these, although over the next few days he did not recognize it when he saw it. On Sunday night he sat up late at the kitchen table with two pads of paper. On one he scribbled the cast list, moving Ernesto Maestro's name from spot to spot and then crossing it out again. It wasn't likely that Ernesto, who had both run out of an audition and run into a tree, was going to feel he deserved any role he and Smilso could dream up. Plus, it was both ridiculous and surreal having to go to all this trouble in the first place when the film was never actually going to exist. Signor Speranza scowled.
"Mannequin,"
he scrawled in the margin, and then, "ask Smilso about this." On the other pad, he had written at the top, 51 days, stroke 70,000 euros, and circled it. Underneath this were two lonely figures, 68,000, the amount Signor Maestro had contributed, the amount Signor Speranza very much feared might be rescinded if he did not find a satisfactory role for Ernesto, and 200, the amount he and Berta had scraped together from their household funds. He sighed. 1,800 euros left. He wrote this figure at the bottom of the page and drew a box around it. It might as well be a million.
"Papa! Are you in here?"
came Gemma's voice from the hall. Signor Speranza scrambled, shuffling his notepads together so that the one with the numbers was hidden from view. As Gemma came into the kitchen, he stretched his arms over his head and feigned a theatrical yawn.
"Papa, what are you doing up? I thought I heard a noise out here."
Gemma looked over his shoulder at the notepad.
"Oh, I see," she said. "You're trying to find a spot for poor Ernesto."
She got a glass of water and sat down across from him.
"I am not surprised. He was always very quiet at school."
"Hmm," Signor Speranza nodded. He had forgotten that Gemma and Ernesto had been at school together. It had always seemed to him that Gemma was somehow frozen at 16 or 17 years old, and everyone else had just grown up around her. Where had the time gone?
"You know," said Gemma, taking a sip of water, "he was always very good at singing."
I remember that. Did you ask him to sing, Papa?
Signor Speranza frowned. He recalled Signor Maestro saying something similar. My son has the voice of an angel. That was what he had said. Ernesto certainly did not look as if he had the voice of an angel. He looked as if he had the voice of a tree stump.
Maybe I'll try that, Signor Speranza said. Thank you for suggesting it.
They sat there for a few moments, Signor Speranza fiddling with his notepad and wishing he could think of something to say, Gemma sipping her water. Finally, he broke the silence.
Everything is... he hesitated. Everything with you is going okay.
He saw her stiffen, as she always did whenever he asked her questions like this, whenever he trespassed the borders of her private, closely held world. He ducked his head, waiting for the explosion, the shout, and the slam of a door. But it didn't come.
Yes, Papa, said Gemma, rolling her eyes. Everything is going okay.
Okay, said Signor Speranza, acting as though it was no big deal. But as Gemma left to go back to bed, he snuck a quick glance at the ceiling and whispered, Thank you. The next morning at 7, Signor Speranza crouched by the front window of Speranza and Sons and peered out into the square. It was too early for most people to be out and about, but he had darkened the lights in the showroom and posted the back in 15 minutes sign on the front door, just in case, to discourage any unannounced visitors, and especially Don Rocco. He did not wish to discuss the state of his soul on an empty stomach, especially when he had an important errand to accomplish. Across the street and the cracks around the blinds he detected movement in the butcher's shop. The Maestro's sons, no doubt, as Signor Maestro did not usually arrive on the premises until 9. And diagonally he saw Don Rocco, waiting outside the church for the members of the ladies' rosary circle. Once the ladies arrived, it would be safe for Signor Speranza to venture outside.
"Good morning, ladies,"
Don Rocco shouted as two of the members, Signora Barbaro and Signora Pedula, approached.
"Did you sleep well?"
The ladies hobbled closer, and Signor Speranza saw Signora Barbaro throw her hands in the air.
"Marianna," she cried, "look who it is."
"Chi è?"
Signor Pedula swiveled her head back and forth.
"Who is it?"
"Jesus!"
cried Signora Barbaro. Signor Speranza bit his knuckle to stifle laughter as the two ladies converged on a very startled Don Rocco.
"Che bello!"
Signora Barbaro pressed her hands to the priest's cheeks.
"Bello!"
She kissed him on either side of his face.
"Is he going to say the rosary with us?"
asked Signora Pedula.
"Marianna!" Signor Barbaro scolded. "It's Jesus! He's busy!"
"No, no, signora."
Don Rocco's face burned red.
"I am not Jesus. It's only Miss Don Rocco. But I will be happy to say the rosary with you."
Signora Barbaro appeared to consider this.
"Come along, Jesus," she said, taking him by the hand. "Let's go and find a seat."
And she and her sister dragged him into the church. The coast clear, Signor Speranza gathered his courage and went across to the butcher's shop. The door jingled as he went inside, and several maestro sons looked up in surprise.
"Good morning, signore,"
said Ivano, who had paused in scrubbing the counter.
"I am sorry, but we are not open yet."
Signor Speranza held up one hand.
"Is Ernesto here?"
he asked. The brothers murmured amongst themselves, and then Ernesto himself emerged from the back room.
"Ciao, signore,"
he said miserably, looking down at his feet, and Signor Speranza noted that he had a large purplish goose egg in the centre of his forehead. Signor Speranza decided to get right down to business.
"I am here, Ernesto," he said, "because my daughter told me that you can sing."
Ernesto looked up, startled.
"Gemma said that."
Signor Speranza nodded. "She said it, and so did your father. Is this true?" Ernesto frowned and gazed at the floor again, but Ivano spoke for him.
"It really is true, signore," he said earnestly. "He has the best singing voice I've ever heard. Sometimes he sings the rest of us to sleep."
Signor Speranza's moustache quivered as he pondered this particular mental image, but he was able to maintain his composure.
"Well, then, Ernesto," he said, crossing his arms, "here is your second chance. Sing."
Ernesto looked up, panicked. "Signore," he pleaded, "I cannot."
But this time his brothers clustered around him, and Signor Speranza stood firm, blocking the door.
"Come on, Ernesto," coaxed Ivano. "We all know you can do it."
Ernesto glanced round helplessly, but there was no way out. Finally, he closed his eyes, he took a deep breath, and he began to sing. It was the Ave Maria. As the first tremulous notes rang out, a chill went down Signor Speranza's spine. The song grew, and Ernesto's voice expanded, and the walls of the butcher's shop seemed to drop away. Signor Speranza closed his eyes also, and found that he was at the Church of Santa Agata 60 years ago. He saw himself, practically a baby. He saw his father. He saw a pine box covered in yellow flowers. Baby Giovannino reached out a chubby hand.
"Mamma?"
Luigi Speranza caught the baby's hand and kissed it.
"No, Giovannino," he said. "No."
The baby began to cry. The song ended, and Signor Speranza was back at the butcher's shop. He opened his damp eyes and blinked.
"Thank you, Ernesto," he said, clearing his throat, and then he turned and left.
He marched across the street, conscious that the eyes of the Maestro siblings followed him through the cracks in the blind. When he opened the door at Speranza and Sons, he found his assistant just arrived to work.
"Good morning, Smilzo," he called. "I know what we are going to do with Ernesto, Maestro."
Signor Speranza, his conscience on the point of spontaneous combustion over the massive fraud he was about to commit against friend and neighbour, instructed Smilzo to text Antonella that the cast list would be posted that afternoon at 2 o'clock on the olive tree outside the café. So adept was Antonella in her self-appointed role as town crier that they did not need to tell anyone else, and practically the entire village was on hand when at 1:57 p.m. employer and assistant emerged from Speranza and Sons, Signor Speranza in front, with the list held over his head, and Smilzo trailing after with a hammer and nail. Once the list was affixed to the tree's trunk, Signor Speranza began to make a short speech, but he was soon engulfed by the crowd as they scrambled to see.
"Antonia!"
crowed Antonella, raising her arms in the air in a double cascade of silver bangle bracelets.
"I knew it!"
Then she placed her finger on the spot where Dante Rinaldi's name was listed for the role of Vincenzo.
"I'm right next to Dante because he is my leading man."
Signor Speranza heard this and glanced at Smilzo, who was filming the moment for his documentary, his face a delicate shade of purple. Whoops went up from the Trezza family, and the Beezys and the Zampronias. Then a flock of maestros fought their way over.
"Ernesto, look!"
shouted Ivano, who had got there first. Ernesto and his father made their way to the front, and Ernesto ran his finger down the list.
"Marcello," he read aloud. "It's a singing role," piped up Smilzo, who was still filming. "I have written the part just for you."
Ernesto looked at Smilzo and then back at the list, a dazed smile dawning on his face.
"This is good, Ernesto."
Signor Maestro grunted, and he put his arm around his son's shoulder. Signor Speranza and Smilzo exchanged a triumphant look.
"We did it."
"So, Speranza," Signor Maestro turned round, his hands on his hips,
"when does filming begin?"
Signor Speranza threw his hands in the air.
"Oh, Dio, this man was never satisfied." "I don't know, signore," he said sarcastically. "Why don't you tell me?"
Signor Maestro stroked his chin, considering.
"I think Friday would be good."
Signor Speranza cast his eyes at the sky and sent up a petition to St. Monica, the patron saint of patience. Could he pretend to start filming? He supposed he could.
"But what about Dante, boss?"
asked Smilzo, his forehead rumpled after Signor Maestro had left.
"And the crew and the director? What if they are not here by Friday?"
Signor Speranza squirmed.
Dante wants us to begin without them. He said that he trusts us."
He flinched, waiting for Smilzo to question this ridiculous assertion, but his assistant merely turned a pleasant shade of pink and beamed. The crowd dispersed soon after that, and Signor Speranza and Smilzo, having made their sensation, went back to the shop, Smilzo to finish his screenplay, and Signor Speranza to putter about and secretly obsess over the 1,800 euros they still needed to pay for the pipes. He had enjoyed the unveiling of the list quite a bit more than he had expected, but now that it was over, he felt deflated.
"I am going to wash the mat out front, Smilzo," he called to his assistant as he opened the front door,
but Smilzo did not answer him. He was engrossed in his story, a world away. Signor Speranza sighed and went outside, and was just on the point of turning on the hose when he happened to glance up and perceived Don Rocco, whom, now that he thought of it, he had not seen earlier at the café, standing on the church lawn in the distance and staring beadily at him across the square. Betta unveiled a money-making idea that night at dinner. "My mother's croquette di patate, Nino," she announced with an air of triumph. "That's the answer to your problem." Signor Speranza squinted across the table at his wife. Stress had been gathering in his temples all afternoon, and this enigmatic suggestion gave his already aching head a particularly vicious throb. He frowned.
"What are you talking about?"
Betta rolled her eyes as if it were obvious.
"Come on, Nino. People would pay good money for these potato croquettes. They're delicious."
"I remember those," piped up Gemma. "Nonna used to hide them for me at parties so the grown-ups wouldn't eat them all."
She glanced back and forth between her parents, her forehead creased.
"Why do you need money, Papa?"
Betta intervened, waving her hand.
"It's not Papa who needs money, it's the film. The film needs 1,800 euros.
Gemma's face cleared.
"Oh, well, that's all right, then,"
she said, taking a bite of pasta.
"How much would you charge, Mama?"
Betta shrugged.
"Maybe 10 euros for a dozen?"
"Hmm," said Gemma. "That's not bad.
I will make a batch of free samples tonight."
Betta got up from the table and took down the big steel bowl from the top of the refrigerator. "Then tomorrow, Nonno will go round the village with a notebook and take orders. Sell them door to door."
"I'm coming with you for that, Nonno,"
Carlotta announced firmly, twirling her spaghetti.
"I want to go to all the doors."
"That's a good girl," said Betta, beaming.
"You will help Nonno make sales. Who can say no to my little cucuzza?"
It was at this juncture that Signor Speranza attempted to regain control of his household.
"Scusi, but when did I say I'm going anywhere?" he roared.
Betta scattered a handful of flour on the cutting board and pulled a face.
"What, Signor Big Shot, you have a better idea?"
Signor Speranza did not have a better idea. So the following morning he called Smilzo, asking him to mind the shop, and watched as Betta filled a basket with freshly fried croquettes, separated by layers of oil-soaked paper towels. "Now, Nino," she said, wagging her finger, "Carlotta is going to be watching to be sure you don't eat all the samples. Isn't that right, cara mia?" Carlotta answered by squealing and jumping up and down. Signor Speranza, who was affronted at his wife's suggestion that he might eat all the samples, crossed his arms and muttered darkly under his breath. Betta followed them to the front door, rattling off instructions.
"Gemma, make sure that Carlotta does not get too tired. If she does, you can bring her back early and Papa will be fine on his own. Nino, make sure you get everyone's name down clearly and how many dozen they want. Oh, and be sure you tell everyone this is for the film. Tell them that if they contribute, they'll get their names in the credits. They'll like that."
As it turned out, Betta was right, and everyone did like that very much. They also liked the free samples, and by noon, having canvassed most of the village, Signor Speranza had 49 orders recorded in his notebook, and 490 euros lining his pockets. They were just starting the walk up the mountain to call on the Rossis when Ernesto Maestro spotted them.
"Signore!" he called, waving.
Signor Speranza, who was hot and tired and not in the mood for maestros, no matter how angelic their voices might be, angled sideways and tried to pretend he hadn't seen him, but Ernesto jogged cheerily over.
"Hello, Gemma," he said. "Carlotta."
Then he turned to Signor Speranza and grinned.
I have been practicing my singing, signore.
Oh, said Signor Speranza vaguely. That's nice. He tried steering Carlotta back on the path. Come on, girls, we have to hurry. Nonna will be wanting us home soon.
Ernesto brightened.
Where are you going?
Signor Speranza had been on the point of snapping that it was none of his business, when Gemma beat him to the punch.
We're going to see if the Rossis want to buy some of my mother's croquette di patate, she said, lifting the basket of samples and giggling. We're raising money for the film.
That's great, said Ernesto. Mind if I come with you? I could do with a walk.
And before Signor Speranza could object, Ernesto had joined them, and the four of them were walking together up the mountain. 20 minutes later, they were nearly at the Rossis.
What's in this bag?
Signor Speranza asked Carlotta crossly. He and his granddaughter were leading the little caravan, Gemma and Ernesto having lagged behind by several meters, talking. Signor Speranza was carrying Carlotta's sparkly pink backpack, which she had insisted on bringing with her and solemnly pledged she would carry herself. It weighed, according to Signor Speranza's conservative estimate, 70 kilos.
"Let's stop and wait for them to catch up," he said, dropping the bag onto the path.
He unzipped it and peeped inside. Toys. It was stuffed to the brim with toys.
"Nonno, what is that?"
Carlotta stood on her tiptoes and pointed. Signor Speranza shielded his eyes. In the distance, on the Rossi's front lawn, he could just barely make out a puffy orange object with smaller black and white objects swarming over it. He sighed.
That, cara mia, is a bambolina.
He watched the Rossi's front door open, and Signor Rossi come out, shouting at the pile of dogs and waving his arms. Behind them, Gemma and Ernesto rounded a bend, and Signor Speranza caught a snatch of their conversation.
I hope you don't mind, Ernesto was saying, but I always thought Luca Ricci was a big jerk.
Signor Speranza stiffened. His heart thudded in his ears, and he waited for Gemma to shout or scream. Maybe she would even punch Ernesto in the face.
"Thank you, Ernesto," she said. "That's nice of you to say."
Signor Speranza's mouth dropped open. "What? Where was this nice of you to say when he had wanted to call Luca Ricci names? And much better, more elaborate names than jerk, too." He was so stunned that Gemma and Ernesto overtook him on the path. He watched them go, Carlotta streaking out in front of them, until Gemma turned around.
"Come on, Papa," she called. "What are you waiting for?"
By the time they reached the house, Bambolina was safely inside and lounging on the front windowsill, her breath fogging up the glass. The unattended schnauzers were bounding on the lawn in all directions, overjoyed at having company.
"Puppies!"
Carlotta cried, and collapsed on the lawn amidst them, elated at being a substitute Pomeranian.
"I think you should go in without us, Papa," said Gemma, laughing. "I think Carlotta is going to be a while."
The Rossis ordered a dozen.
"I don't know how we can thank you for this, signore," said Signor Rossi, pressing the bills into Signor Speranza's hand. "This film business has made us Serena very happy."
"Yes," agreed Signora Rossi, who was knitting on the couch.
"She's dancing, she's singing. You would not believe the change."
"Maybe I would," thought Signor Speranza, his eyes drifting to the window. He could see Carlotta and Ernesto both rolling on the ground with the herd of schnauzers, and Gemma on the side watching and laughing. Then he glanced around the humble Rossi house that was so like the house in which he had grown up, and his conscience lurched.
"You know, signore," he said, lowering his voice, "I have not heard from this Dante Rinaldi. These film stars, they have very busy schedules."
He hesitated.
"I worry if, for some reason, he were not able to come, or if he were somehow delayed."
But Signor Rossi shook his head.
"I don't care if he never gets here, signore," he declared. "Just the promise of him coming has been like a miracle."
Signor Speranza said his goodbyes then, patting the now sleeping Bambolina on the head and promising he would continue to contemplate her dilemma. When he went outside,
he found all but one of the schnauzers gone. They said we could have one, said Gemma, nodding her head towards the neighbour's house. Apparently, eight schnauzers is too many, even if you like schnauzers. But I told Carlotta she'd have to ask you first.
Ernesto scooped the remaining creature up and handed it over. Signor Speranza wasn't expecting it, and the puppy scrambled in his arms, tiny, silky, and probably ferocious, with its woolly white legs and a frizzled beard like a scrubber brush. Carlotta was jumping up and down.
I will take care of it myself. No, no, I promise, I promise.
Signor Speranza frowned up at the sky.
You did not think I was busy enough, Lord. Now you want to throw a puppy into the mix.